This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to the AJ Podcast. I'm your host, Emily Slofstra, as we explore the March-April edition of Alternatives Journal on the topic of greenbelts. On pages 32 and 33 of this issue, there's a map of assorted greenbelts, which caused me to reminisce about my travels in Europe a few years ago. I lived in the dense city of Amsterdam, and occasionally felt a big disconnect between the Dutch city and my tiny hometown in southwestern Ontario. I took a short vacation in the Groene Hart, the Netherlands Greenbelt, where I canoed the canals and biked through small towns, but the feeling was still very different from so much of Canada, except maybe the prairies. It wasn't until I drove across Germany that I felt an incredible connection to the landscape, with vast forests and rolling hills. It was only upon working on this issue of alternatives that I learned that there was a greenbelt along our route. As I was preparing this issue's podcast, I asked around to AJ staff to see if anyone else had stories about their favorite greenbelt experiences. Two of my colleagues shared that the Greenbelt Harvest Picnic last fall was a great memory, where they got to hang out with other AJ staff, listen to great music, and enjoy the scenery of Dundas, Ontario. Our two interviewees also shared their favorite memories throughout the interviews on this podcast. And stay tuned after the interviews to hear our business manager David McConaughey wax poetic about how the Ontario Greenbelt helped his nature deficit disorder. Today's podcast brings you two interviews with AJ contributors. First up, I spoke with Ray Tumulty, who wrote the piece Buckle Up Montreal on the 25-year-long struggle to create a greenbelt in the St. Lawrence Valley. Ray and I chatted about what the next year will hold for the Greenbelt Plan, as well as other challenges and benefits that might come from protecting the space. Ellen Jakubowski, author of The Green Curtain on page 18, spoke with Liana Gaidezis, Regional Coordinator of Greenbelt Central Europe. Starting today's podcast, we have the song Site 41 by Betty Supple of Hamilton, Ontario. Tumulty is principal of Smart Cities Research Services, which can be found at smartcities.ca, and he's also an adjunct professor in the School of Urban Planning at McGill University. Here he is, speaking from Montreal on March 6, 2012.
So your article is on page 27. It's called
Buckle Up Montreal.
Right.
So it explains that there's a sharp brain trust and $90 million backing the plan to create a green belt around Montreal.
Right.
And it also talks about how the idea for the green belt began taking shape nearly 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. So could you summarize for our listeners where the green belt plan is today?
The most important recent development was the creation of a regional plan for the Greater Montreal area. And that's the first such plan in the history of the Montreal region. We've never had a plan in the past, just municipal plans, but the 82 municipalities that make up the Greater Montreal region didn't have a collective plan. So in December of 2011, that plan was created, and it included reference to the idea of the Greenbelt, which had been promoted for many years by environmentalists, a coalition of environmentalists in the region. So it was the first real government official stamp of approval of this idea of a Greenbelt. And that was included in the regional plan, and some money was then announced by the provincial government to help to implement that Greenbelt plan.
That's great. So where do you expect the Greenbelt plan will be a year from now?
Well, right now there's the government first announced $30 million, and then recently, just a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that the regional government and municipal governments would pony up an additional $30 million each. So now there's $90 million in the kitty, and that will go a long way to establishing a number of crucial connectors and like linear parks and preservation of some shorelines and some sensitive green areas, ecological features in the region to help knit together this fabric of green spaces. So in a year from now, I don't think that money will be spent that quickly, but I think there are five projects altogether, and those five projects should be well along in the consultation and planning stages, and perhaps moving into implementation. But I suspect it'll take several years for that to be completely implemented.
Right.
The other thing that's happening in the region that is related but not directly part of the Greenbelt is a regional bike path network that's being created that crosses the entire Greater Montreal region from the southeast corner, I think, to the northwest corner. I think it's 140 kilometers long, something like that, and that's also been funded by the provincial government, and that is currently being planned and should be built over the next couple of years. So that's important because it builds a sense of regional identity, so that it brings people together over something that is over green mobility and helps people think of the Montreal region as something that's worth protecting and fighting for, and that can only help in the long term with the implementation of the Greenbelt plan.
That's great. Yeah, you mentioned that you want people to react the same way about the Greenbelt as they do about, say, cutting down trees on Mount Royal. So
yeah,
it seems like
exactly.
Something like that might help tie people together to be in favor of a Greenbelt.
That quote, actually, quotation was from Carol Mayrand, who I interviewed for the article. And I really like that quotation because a few months ago, here in Montreal, a group from outside the city that was protecting forested areas announced that they were going to come into the city and cut down trees on Mount Royal. And you should have seen the fuss. It was like a huge media flurry about these people coming in from the countryside to cut down trees in the city, because they were protesting how, you know, trees are cut down routinely in the countryside in order to supply the city. And they thought that they should come in and cut down a few trees here to let us know what it felt like. So these people showed up one morning, and there was, all the media trucks were all around. They showed up on Mount Royal, and they got out their saws and everything. And the journalists, of course, assumed that they were going to approach a few trees on Mount Royal and start cutting them down. But what they did was they just opened up the back of their truck and they pulled out a bunch of potted trees that they'd brought from the nursery and cut them down. So they didn't actually damage any trees on Mount Royal, but they sure did achieve their publicity objective, because it was big news here for several days that these guys had threatened trees on Mount Royal. And it really pointed out how people value the mountain and the bit of nature that's left within the central city. And yeah, that's exactly what this interviewee was saying, is that we have to feel that way about the whole green belt, not just the remnant parts that are, you know, so precious to city dwellers, but that there are lots of residual pieces of nature in throughout the whole region that need to be protected and prized and treasured by people.
And that's a good tie-in to my next question, which is, alongside your article, there's a little sidebar that says, what difference will a Montreal Green Belt make?
Uh-huh.
And it mentions that there's a development that might be stopped if the Green Belt goes through.
Yeah.
Are there any other differences that would be positive if the Green Belt were to be established?
Well, there are those five rehabilitation projects that I mentioned. So those will definitely make a big difference, because those are the really crucial projects that will help to knit together the green belt. So those will make a big difference. The way that we talk about the green belt in the English world is, you know, we use the word belt, which makes it sound like it's a circle around the city and not including the city. But as I explained in my article, here in Montreal, Francophones use the word tram, T-R-A-M-E, which means like the weft of a fabric. And that is a slightly different archetype. It's a slightly different vision of what the remaining green areas of an urban region can look like, because the idea of a fabric includes all of the green areas within the countryside, but also the city. So it's a more comprehensive, inclusive type of vision than the one that was used to establish the green belt around Toronto.
Right.
And those five projects that I've mentioned to you are partially, in or near the urban areas. So they will, carrying out those five projects, will really start to instantiate this vision of an interconnected urban fabric.
Right, because Montreal, the city itself, has like an ecological or biodiversity kind of plan as well, right? With lots of corridors of green space.
Well, it has a green space preservation plan, but unfortunately it didn't have very much budget behind it.
Yeah,
it hasn't been that successful in terms of creating new green space, but most of the green space that we're talking about is privately owned. So both on the island of Montreal and the green belt areas off the island. So it's a challenge to preserve those areas and, you know, to protect them and preserve them over the long term, because they're in private hands, and a lot of the property owners involved want to want to exploit their lands in order to bring in money. So it just makes it very difficult and expensive. So the government, one challenge is the government needs to find, the provincial government and regional government need to find ways of creative ways of raising money or reducing the incentive to develop these critical green spaces so that they can be preserved in the long term.
Yeah, definitely. So my next question, it also has to do with challenges. So in the magazine on page 36, we talk about challenges to Ontario's greenbelt. So that includes, for example, leapfrogging development onto areas outside the outside the greenbelt, or developers land banking huge tracts of agricultural land for the future. So are proponents of the Montreal greenbelt keeping tabs on issues such as those that may arise when the greenbelt's legislated?
Yeah, the big challenge here is developers grabbing what's left of the white belt and converting it to urban uses, and then trying to get land out of the, because right now we have farmland that's protected through an agricultural reserve, much like in British Columbia and not like in Ontario. But the challenge is that developers are trying to get land out of that reserve and you know, convert it to urban uses. So that's something that the new coalition for the Greenbelt is watching closely and keeping tabs on. So that's important. Were you thinking maybe there were other challenges? Were you going to ask about that, or?
Well, if there's any others that came to mind, or for example, like in areas outside of this area, so other areas of Quebec, perhaps it might mean that there would be more development there instead of around Montreal.
I see what you mean. Yeah, keep in mind that the proposed Montreal Green Belt is quite huge. Mm-hmm. And it's bigger than, I think it's twice the size, roughly, of the one around Toronto. So I don't think that Green Belt, that leapfrog development would be an issue here. You'd have to drive 2 hours to get outside of the proposed Montreal Green Belt. One thing that I hope that listeners understand is that the regional plan that I was talking about that helps to implement the green belt only covers one quarter of the area of the proposed green belt that the environmental community put forward over the last few years. And so, for instance, the David Suzuki Foundation and Nature Quebec and other large professional environmental groups have been promoting this large green belt over the last few years, and that green belt is absolutely massive, four times the size of the Montreal region, which has that new regional plan I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. So leapfrog development if the whole green belt idea were implemented, leapfrog development would not be an issue. But we do have other issues here that you see in Toronto and in other green belts in the world, and that is infrastructure being built across the green belt, like highways, for instance, are the most destructive. And we've had new highways here in Montreal, and others are being planned. So that's always a concern. Gravel pits, aggregate extraction, is another major issue. Montreal is not growing at the same rate that Toronto is. It's a more slowly growing region, but nonetheless, there are lots of aggregate pits here and new ones being opened up in order to support road construction and bridges and other infrastructure buildings. So that's a big issue as well.
Right. Are there any other similarities or total differences between other green belts, such as in Ontario, that would help to differentiate how this green belt is different? I know you've drawn on quite a few things already, so
Well, Yeah, the Ontario Greenbelt was basically set up with a fell swoop of provincial legislation that very suddenly turned agricultural land that might have been developed for urban purposes into permanently agricultural land and protected other ecological features in a permanent way. The Montreal Greenbelt, so far anyway, hasn't been treated that way. It's going to be more of a piecemeal approach where, hopefully governments will put money into purchasing private land or getting development rights on private land and setting up a slow process that will accumulate over many years into preserving a network of green spaces. So it is more of a gradual approach here where we expect the government to use a number of different instruments, not just the single instrument that was used in Ontario of creating the Greenbelt Act and the Greenbelt Plan. We expect here that it'll be through environmental protection, through acquisition, through habitat regulations, through water regulations, and a whole list of other instruments that the government, the provincial government and regional government can use. So it'll be more of a gradual process here, I think. But hopefully the outcome over time would be just as effective.
Yeah, hopefully they can all work together well and don't get derailed at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention about the Montreal Greenbelt but didn't have room for in the article?
No, I think I got most of it into the article, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty thorough.
Thanks.
So to close off today, uh-huh. I've been collecting stories from AJ staff about their favorite memories of Greenbelt around the world, from Ontario to the Netherlands. Do you have any personal reflections on a Greenbelt experience that you'd like to share?
On a Greenbelt experience?
Perhaps something that got you into working on Greenbelts?
Let me see. Well, the first Greenbelt that I ever experienced was the one around Ottawa. I was driving out of the city towards my cousin's place in Orléans, which is a suburb east of Ottawa. And I really didn't know. I was pretty young. I didn't know about the Greenbelt. And we just drove out of the city, and then suddenly there wasn't any city. And I remember being quite surprised by that and asking somebody, what happened to the city? And they said, well, you're in the Ottawa Greenbelt now. So I had a kind of a favorable impression from that there was a line that stopped the city and where the countryside started, and there was a clear demarcation. And I thought that was the natural order of things, that's the way it should be, rather than the kind of ragged city sprawl that we see in areas without a green belt.
Right. I had a similar experience driving through Germany of actually seeing nature for the first time in a couple months. It felt like just large forests and that kind of thing. So
yeah, yeah.
I can feel that.
Yeah, it makes a difference. It really does. So, yeah, I'm hoping the Montreal one reaches its full potential.
That's great. So if anyone wants to find out more information about the Montreal Greenbelt, is there a website they can go to?
Yeah, it's mentioned in the article in this issue. The Greenbelt Movement or the Green Coalition, Centre Verte. Okay, here in English it's just Green Coalition Verte.
Okay.
.ca. So that's one word, Green Coalition Verte, with an E, V-E-R-T-E, at the end, .ca. And it's probably the best place to start, and there are lots of connections there. Or the David Suzuki Foundation, the Quebec chapter of the David Suzuki Foundation has several interesting reports. One report that just came out on the Greenbelt looking at the value of the natural capital in the Greenbelt and showing that it's if it were monetarized, all of the various ecological functions provided by the Greenbelt would amount to $4.3 billion per year in value. So quite an interesting study that just came out there. And then there's also another major study of the Greenbelt, the idea of the Greenbelt and the various instruments that I was talking about earlier, and how the Greenbelt can be implemented. That's also on the David Suzuki Foundation Quebec site. So that would be of interest to anybody who can read French.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Ray.
Okay, well, thank you, and look forward to seeing the issue.
I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, be a good one. Take care.
Yeah,
bye-bye now.
This is the AJ Podcast, and that was Ray Tomalty on the Montreal Greenbelt Plan. Next up, we have the Montreal-based song Saint Laurent by Cour des Pirates, followed by Ellen Jakubowski interviewing Liana Gaidsis on the Iron Curtain Greenbelt across Europe.
Il est 3h moins quart sur la main, il est tard. Les filles ont dansé pour toi, pour te consoler le roi. Et si tu dors seul ce soir, parmi leurs pleurs d'horreur. Et si tu me laisses dans tes bras, je t'attends. Je sais, tu es pris amoureux, mais j'ai tant dansé pour te gagner mon roi. Et si tu dors seul ce soir, parmi leurs pleurs d'horreur, et si tu
Today I'm speaking with Dr. Liana Gaidsis. Liana is manager of the Central European Greenbelt Project for BUND, Friends of the Earth Germany, which is one of the leading environmental NGOs in Germany. She reaches us from her office in Nuremberg. Hi, Liana.
Hello. Hi, Ellen.
So to start things off today, can you tell us about how you got involved with the Greenbelt and what your job entails beyond answering questions for curious Canadians like myself?
I studied biology with a major subject zoology here in Germany at a university, and I did my PhD on Eurasian otters in Saxony. Maybe as you know, Saxony is a federal state in eastern Germany, so it is in the former German Democratic Republic. So I started with my studies around 5 years after the fall of the Iron Curtain in Germany. So that means that I passed the inner German green belt many, many times during my studies on otters, because I live in Bavaria, and that's a state in the former Federal Republic of Germany, Western Germany. And so really I passed the green belt several times. And during this time on my studies on otters, I had already heard a little bit about the project Greenbelt in Germany, which was initiated and conducted by BUND. And as luck would have it, when I finished my PhD in 1998, BUND advertised a job for a project manager for the Greenbelt Germany. And yes, I got the job. Now, because I'm talking now to you. And now I'm working for 15 years for the Green Belt in our project office here, and that's located here in Bavaria in Nuremberg.
Great.
And yes, and so as the Iron Curtain, maybe as you know, not only divided Germany, but also the rest of Europe, the idea of the European Green Belt developed, and that was in 2002. The vision was first announced in public by our president of BUND during an opening of a land art project. The guest of honor was Mikhail Gorbachev, the former Soviet president. So that was the first time it was spoken into public, yeah, that it would be a good idea that the Green Belt through Europe should be initiated. And the first real big international conference on this topic was then conducted by the German Federal Agency for Nature Conservation in close cooperation with us. And so in 2003, the initiative was born. And since that time, the BUND project office here in Nuremberg is regional coordinator for the Central European part of the Green Belt Europe. And yes, we are mainly initiating and managing national and international activities and projects for the protection and development of the Green Belt, of the Central European Green Belt, but also of the Green Belt Europe. And we commission habitat surveys, species surveys. We are doing a lot of awareness raising, lobbying work, talking to politicians. And in Germany, it's very important we purchase land in the Green Belt in Germany to protect it for a very long time. And this is financed by donations for the Green Belt project.
Cool. Well, it definitely sounds like a lot of work. sound pretty busy.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but we are four persons here in our project office, and we have another persons along the German Green Belt who are working for us.
Great. Well, so with all these activities going on, you're telling me you've just been to a conference in Vienna, February 19th and 20th, which was about using landscape policy to support Greenbelt initiatives. So can you tell us some more about the conference and some of its major outcomes?
Yes, it was a very interesting conference. It was in context of a European Union-funded project called GreenNet. We are also involved in this project. And maybe as you know, the European Green Belt is a multifunctional ecological network here in Europe. And the need of ecological networks for biodiversity in a really more and more fragmented, intensively used and degraded European landscape is very obvious. And also in the European Green Belts, there are gaps caused by intensive agriculture, infrastructure, roads, highways, buildings, hydropower plants, and so on. And so there are three main landscape policy fields, that's protection, management, and landscape planning, which have to be handled to safeguard and develop the European Green Belt. So therefore, the conference aimed to exchange landscape policy instruments between the European partner countries, means what are the frame conditions, which instruments do and can help to push the European Green Belt as an ecological corridor and also an appreciated public good in Europe. So, and one of the main outcomes was that there exists suitable tools for European landscape policy for safeguarding the European Green Belt, but they are handled very, very differently in the European countries, respectively, in some countries, the implementation of the instruments is very weak or does not exist at all. So the use of these instruments for the Green Belt is really still in the beginning, and there's really a lot of work left and a lot of work to do in the future that the Green Belt can be safeguarded by these landscape policy instruments.
Okay, so there's still a lot of coordination that needs
yes.
to happen.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and you know there are 24 countries along the European Green Belt, and they all have different rules and different conventions, so it's
Sorry,
quite hard.
Covers a lot of ground, for sure. Great. So that sounds like it was a pretty useful opportunity to exchange some information.
Yes,
you have another conference coming up as well in May. That's supposed to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Green Belt and also strive to increase political support. So can you tell me some more about that conference?
Oh, yes. As I already mentioned in the beginning, the initiative started in 2003. So we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the European Green Belt Initiative now in May, on the 15th and 16th of May in Berlin. We are very happy. The event is supported by our German Environmental Ministry and also again by the German Federal Agency for Nature Conservation. And we organize it together with them and also with another NGO. It's called EuroNature. That's the Foundation European Heritage. They are the regional coordinators for the Balkan region in the Green Belt. And governmental representatives and important stakeholders of all the 24 states along the European Green Belt, as well as representatives from the European Union, are being expected to attend this event. And we are quite happy because the German Federal Environment Ministry, Peter Altmaier, is hosting the event, and he will be there, and he will talk, and he will participate at a panel discussion. So a good event, and the aim is to increase the political support for the Green Belt Europe as our common European ecological and historical heritage. And the anniversary celebration, so that's a celebration, in the Environmental Ministry in Berlin will be followed by an international symposium where achievements so far, but also future challenges and perspectives of the Green Belt Europe will be presented and discussed. But we have also another celebration on this day. In the evening of the 15th of May, the WeBND will organize an evening event. Where, for example, that's a quite new idea, the European Green Belt Band will perform. That's a very new band, which is founded, I think, 2 weeks ago. And it's a band of 7 persons who are playing music from all regions along the European Green Belt.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be quite interesting.
Well, that sounds like it'll be nice. I don't think any of our Green Belts here in Canada have their own band, so that's pretty unique. Well, that's great. Congratulations on hitting that 10th year anniversary. You guys must be very proud of all that you've accomplished so far.
Yes, we are.
So now I want to move on and talk a little bit about some of the specific locations along the Green Belt. So in our Green Belt Curtain article that appears in the most recent issue of AJ, my co-author Alexandra and I profiled 17 sites along the Green Belt. And these sites represented examples of military history and international cooperation, conservation initiatives, and other things. But we didn't have room to talk about everything. So what are some of the areas along the European Green Belt that you personally think are the most compelling?
That's a very difficult question. And nearly impossible. It's nearly impossible to define the most compelling areas because nearly all areas along the European Green Belt are really fascinating. It depends on the landscape, the culture, the history, even the climate you prefer, yes? And it's really a pity I do not know yet all places along the European Green Belt. I know a lot, but not all. But nevertheless, there are 40 national parks are situated directly along the Green Belt. They are starting in the far north at the Norwegian-Russian Green Belt up to the very south at the Greece Macedonian Albanian Green Belt. So I think these places are really worthwhile to visit. But But I would like to pick out one area, because last year we organized the 6th Pan-European Conference on the European Green Belt in the Mafrovo National Park at the Macedonian-Albanian Green Belt. And as I can say, it's really a fascinating landscape with huge wooded mountain regions and a very endangered mammal species has one of its last retreats there. That's the Balkan lynx. It's a subspecies of the European lynx. And there's the Ohrid Lake. It's one of the oldest lakes in the world. It's fantastic, really fantastic. We had a swim in the Ohrid Lake. And there are the Prespa Lakes. They are located at the Macedonian-Greece Green Belt. And that's very, very close to nature lakes, especially the Prespa, the Little Prespa Lake. And it's a very remote and beautiful landscape. So really a worthwhile region to visit.
But
as I said before, it's really only one example of a very, very many charming regions along the European Green Belt.
Yeah, it covers a huge space, so how can you choose, right? But I'm just about ready to get on the plane and there, you make it sound so nice. I'm glad you mentioned the Balkan lynx too. That's actually our cover for this issue. So
great. And they're really very endangered there. Very, very, very endangered.
Well, that's great. It's great to actually hear a description of one of these places from someone who's actually been there. So thanks for sharing that. And I also understand we were talking earlier about the 10th anniversary of the European Green Belt, but I also understand that the Green Belt in Germany has an important birthday coming up next year. So would you like to talk about that?
Oh, yes. That's next year. We have the 25th anniversary of the German Green Belt. So that will be a really, really, really big event. We have maybe also in May a big anniversary event. And we try to organize 25 different events along the Green Belt Germany next year because of the 25th anniversary. So we will see.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Liana, for sharing all your perspective on the exciting European Green Belt project with us today.
Yes, you're very, very welcome.
Great. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, so thank you very much. Yes. Bye-bye.
That was Ellen Jakubowski interviewing Liana Geitzis about the Green Belt in Central Europe for this edition of the AJ Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit us on the web at alternativesjournal.ca to order copies of the magazine, read online content, and listen to more podcasts. Here's David McConaughey on his Ontario Greenbelt impressions with Richard Garvey's song To Grow to close out the show.
The friendliest of friends stand together.
Back in the early 1990s, I would take leisurely Sunday drives from my apartment in the concrete jungle that is Midtown Toronto. A favorite destination was the Holland Landing, Holland Marsh area, near Highway 400 and Highway 9, east of Orangeville and west of Bradford. Traffic on Sundays were lighter than usual, and within 20 minutes I'd find myself transported from urban congestion to this magical agricultural oasis of life set against a backdrop of row upon row of blacker-than-black soil. I'd visit the farmer's stands on the side of the highway, and then venture down into the marsh itself to speak with the farmers and to touch the life-sustaining earth. And I'd return to my apartment end of the day feeling lighter, freer, less stressed, and with bushels full of local seasonal fruits and vegetables. I didn't know I had been suffering from a nature deficit disorder. I just knew that visiting this green space made me feel better, more grounded.
The blissful path we've taken, you can't plead your ignorance forever. You can't plead your ignorance forever. Mother Nature spoke to me, said, leave behind man's mediocrity, ignore consumer hypocrisy, and come on home to mama. Cause you are more than a worker, so much more than a consumer. So don't let people walk all over you. I share the beauty of your spring blooms. So let me plant you in my soil. Oh, let me plant you in my soil. And you'll be just like a blade of grass. You'll stand up straight and grow back up. And every time they cut you down, you'll be just like a tree in a forest with roots deep. Yeah, branches reaching out so humanly. And you'll have so much love that more will come back. And so